So today we will talk about the Bahupakara Dhamma, the commentary calls them Bahupakara, in the Tipitaka they're called Bahukara. Bahukara means they do a lot, it's a very simple word, Dhammas that do a lot. But the commentary explains that they are bahupakara. Upakara means they are great support. Upakara means support or help. It also says they're hitavaha, which means they bring benefit. But these two dhammas are singled out by the Buddha, singled out also by the ancient teachers up into the present time. This is the first Dhamma that they learn in Thailand, the Bahupakara Dhamma. The two Bahupakara Dhamma are Sati and Sampajanya. So the idea is that, of course, there are many dhammas that are of benefit, many dhammas that support our practice and support our lives, and many dhammas you can consider to just be a general support for you, of great benefit, of great help. But many of those dhammas are only beneficial at a certain time. Like, for example, friendliness, metta, is useful when you're angry. When you're angry at someone, you can motivate yourself to be friendly towards them. Or in general, you can motivate yourself to be friendly so that when you're angry, you're able to quench and remove the anger. Mindfulness of the Buddha is something that is useful when you are feeling discouraged. Mindfulness of death, when you're feeling lazy, reminding you, hey, we're all going to die, you better work hard, and so on. There are dhammas that are useful from time to time. There are other dhammas that are useful, but still require something to cultivate. For example, sila, ethics. How does someone really be an ethical person? It's not something you can just decide to do one day. Sure, you can take the precepts, but to actually be ethical, to be a good person, a person who is free from qualities that harm others, well, you need to develop yourself. Concentration, even wisdom. You can't just decide to be wise, of course. You can't decide to be focused, you can't decide. So it's proper to single out these two dhammas, sati and sampajanya, as the dhammas that are the most helpful. As the commentary uses, the word the commentary uses is sabbata, which means everywhere. They're useful everywhere. And this is from the Buddha's words where he says, especially about sati, that it is useful everywhere. Sabbatikang, something that is useful everywhere. So I haven't given you the translations. The translations for these two words are difficult. Mostly because you don't want to trivialize them. Sati we often translate as mindfulness, but that doesn't really capture the depth and breadth of the word. These are very special dhammas. These are things that will change your life if you practice them. So they're more than just, oh, be mindful, right? It's something that it's better to understand and to know the details or the characteristics of, and of course the means of implementing, rather than to give you a word that translates it. If we want to talk about what the word translates to, it helps us to understand the meaning, the definition, and the characteristics of it. Sati means something literally like recall or recollection, remembrance, or the ability. It can also refer to the ability to do those things. So if someone has sati, it means they have the ability to recall. They have the capacity to remember things. So when we see the Buddha talk about this word in a general sense, he talks about remembering things that happened a long time ago. Someone who can remember things that happened a long time ago is someone who has sati. So it doesn't mean mindfulness or attention or anything like that, comprehension or whatever you might translate it as. It means the ability to remember, the ability to recall or recollect. And that's valuable to understand. Of course, this isn't how it's used in meditation, or this isn't what is the most valuable. Of course, it's valuable to remember things that happened a long time ago, but not very valuable, not extremely valuable. And of course, we use it, we use sati for the present moment. But talking about it in terms of recall helps us understand the meaning. If you think of your inability to recall things, something that happened a long time ago, what is it like when you can't remember it? It's fuzzy, it's dark. Maybe you meet someone and they say, "Hey, do you remember me?" And fuzzy. Maybe you don't remember them so well. That means your mind, your sati is not very good. That's what that means. So it helps us to understand what it's going to be like to cultivate sati in the present moment. Sati is like a focusing, like when you focus a camera. Ordinarily, our experience of momentary everyday life is fuzzy. So mindfulness is like this profound shift where suddenly everything is clear, where there's a clarity that wasn't there before. Mindfulness is also like turning on a light in a dark room. If you're in a dark room at night, maybe you can see a little bit, but maybe you step on a rope and you think it's a snake. But then you turn on the light and you see it's just a rope. Mindfulness is that clarity that comes from turning on the light. The commentaries give a very specific descriptions of the word sati. This is what they do for all of the dhammas. They call it the lakkhanadicatukka. There are four aspects of a dhamma, starting with the characteristic. So there's the characteristic, the function, the manifestation, and the proximate cause. So if we really want to understand what sati is, this is all theoretical. It will help us to implement it, to put it into practice, to understand what exactly we're talking about. It also helps us to understand why we practice the way we do and why we can claim that this is what leads to sati. So we can understand what is it doing, how does it work, and how can it be of great benefit. So the characteristic of sati is not wavering. So if you think of what it means to be out of focus, well, if you have a video camera and you keep moving it back and forth, or if your hands are shaking, you'll never see very clearly. The commentaries say like a gourd. A gourd is like a pumpkin, something like, it's very light, like a beach ball. And if the gourd is on top of the water, any waves or any wind are going to buffet the gourd, a very light thing, like a beach ball on the water, it won't stay still. Say the commentary says the ordinary mind is like this, never still, never focused, and not deeply penetrative of experiences. So we might know that we're walking, we might know that we're standing, we might know that we're hearing and seeing and so on, but it's not very clear because we're very quick to react and quick to extrapolate. But mindfulness is, they say, is like a pillar stuck into the earth. Like when you build a wall, you need pillars that are completely unmoving. Even if there's an earthquake, it won't move. Mindfulness is the opposite of this gourd on the water. It's something that is stable, the most stable thing you can think of. That's the idea. So there's this characteristic of stability. When you have mindfulness, you are fixed and focused on the object. There's a stability, there's a perfect focus on the experience. The function of sati, I use the English word mindfulness, of course, but the word sati, the function of sati is not forgetting. So again, back to this idea of memory. Mindfulness is when being able to remember things, but in the present moment, it's you can understand why we use this term. It means you don't lose sight of the experience. When you're walking, there's an awareness of the foot moving, walking, and you don't lose that. Forgetting would be to start being distracted. You're walking, but your mind is somewhere else. And it would also be reacting to the experience. You're walking, but you like the experience of walking, or you don't like it. I've been walking for so long, or that sort of thing. This would be forgetting about, losing sight of the experience. So that's why the word sati is used. If you can remember in the present moment, it means you can be present again and again and be perfectly with the experience just as it is. The manifestation of sati is either guarding, so mindfulness, sati guards the mind from greed, from anger, from delusion. Because it stays with the experience just as it is, it's many times the Buddha talked about it like a doorkeeper, a guard at the gate of a city. So all the experiences can come in. One aspect of the practice that's very important that new meditators realize quite soon is we're not trying to stop experiences. We're not trying to change experiences. But the experiences can come in. We don't let the defilements in. It guards the mind against reactions to the experience. Or another manifestation, it manifests as confronting. So sati is this state of facing the experience without fighting against it, but also without running away. So for example, when you have pain or any kind of negative experience, instead of trying to get rid of it or run away from it, you face it. And the same goes with good experiences. Instead of trying to acquire them, to build them, to keep them, simply facing them. This is the salient quality of mindfulness, how it manifests. When you're mindful, it's a means of facing your experience without wavering, without stressing about them. And finally, the proximate cause of mindfulness is also twofold. It's either the four satipatthana, practicing of the mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the feelings, mindfulness of the mind, mindfulness of the Dhamma. Or it's something called tirasanya. So two ways of looking at the proximate cause. Tirasanya is a very valuable word. It helps us understand how we can cultivate sati and why we practice the way we do. Sanya is recognition. It's recognition, recognizing something. Sanya is when you recognize this is pain, or you recognize I'm walking, or you recognize I'm seeing, this is seeing, hearing. Any kind of recognition in the mind occurs at the very beginning of an experience. You experience something, there's a recognition of it. Tira means strong or firm. And so the practice of noting, of repeating some kind of mantra of any kind, it can be a mantra in samatha meditation or a mantra in vipassana meditation, a word that reaffirms the experience. The reason for using this word is to cultivate this firm or strong perception, meaning seeing doesn't go on to, oh, I like what I see, it's good, it's bad, it's me, it's mine, or all these other things. You reaffirm seeing is just seeing. So the next moment, doesn't become a chain reaction that creates stress and suffering and ego and attachment and so on. The next moment is a reaffirmation, is a loop back to the actual experience. Seeing is just seeing. When you feel pain and you say to yourself, pain, 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 you cultivate the ability to see the pain just as it is. So you have all these qualities that we talked about with sati. It's a firmness, a strength, not losing sight of the actual experience, guarding against the defilements. This is how tirasanya is really what we are practicing when we say to ourselves, pain, pain, or when we walk, we say walking, walking, and so on. So this is the idea behind the word sati. We translate often as mindfulness. It's the quality of mind that is evoked when you reaffirm this perception. When you say to yourself, walking, walking, there's a clarity. The mind is clear, it's firm, it's strong, and it's unsullied. There's no greed, no anger, no delusion, and so on. The second word, sampajanya. Sampajanya is often translated as clear comprehension, full awareness. I don't know what the various translations are. But it's a pretty easy word actually to understand linguistically. Nya, the word nya is a root. So sampajanya, nya is a root which means in regards to knowing. Pa is a prefix that means strong or firm or completely, complete. Yeah. So panya is a word that we use to mean wisdom, because nya is if you know something and could be referring to wisdom, but it's a general word. Generic word. It could mean book knowledge. It could mean something you know because you experienced it. But panya is a word that means full and complete knowledge or perfect knowledge. So we use it to refer to wisdom, actual direct experience, or something higher, something profound. So pajanya. Janya is janya just means nya. It's just how the grammar work, how the root duplicates itself. But pajanya just means wisdom. Sampajanya gives the idea of the sam at the beginning is another prefix, and this is common. They add multiple prefixes to word. Sampajanya is something like wisdom or full knowledge about yourself, or it's continuous knowledge, but the idea is something like knowing yourself completely all the time. And it's the kind of word that is used sort of colloquially. So the Buddha is using something that should be familiar to people, because the word sampajanya isn't actually one of the dhammas in the Abhidhamma. They say, oh, it's just wisdom. Sampajanya just refers to wisdom, and that's technically accurate. But why the Buddha used this word is because colloquially, we're talking about knowing what you're doing. When you walk, to know you're walking, to be constantly aware of your experiences. So colloquially, it's easy to again trivialize this word, to think, oh yeah, yeah, well, when I walk, I know I'm walking. And just like mindfulness, I'm mindful all the time. Like I have people teaching them meditation, they say, oh yeah, well, I'm mindful. Were you saying to yourself walking? No, but I was mindful. So we have this vague sort of kind of nebulous idea of both of these things. But the truth is, to really know, knowing comes first. You have to know there's pain before you can say pain. You have to know that you're walking before you can say walking, walking. So even before mindfulness, there's knowing. But it's not true knowing, it's not clear knowing. And these two things absolutely go together. Once there is the clarity of mindfulness, what is the result? Clear awareness, the clear knowledge of the experience. And so this is a very laden term, sampajanya. It's not just knowing that you're walking or something like that, knowing when you feel pain, because the commentary says, well, animals know when they feel pain. They sure know it. If they're caused pain, they cry out. They know that they're in pain, but they don't have this strong and pure knowledge or deep knowledge, wisdom. You know. Wisdom comes after mindfulness, after sati. So as you clear out all the distractions, all the extrapolations, all the judgments and reactions, and pain is just pain, seeing is just seeing, thinking is just thinking. When your mind is there, there arises this, or you're free from all of the dust and grime that would darken or blur your experience. So when you note the pain, it's laden by the knowledge of impermanence, where other people see stability. Oh, this if I hold on to it, it will be something I can rely upon. It will be stable, it will be with me forever. This person I have, this person will be with me forever. My parents, my partner, my children, these possessions of mine, they're stable. I mean, we don't intellectually think that, but we get the sense wrongly that things are stable. We don't realize that every single aspect of our existence is unstable. It's made up of moments of experience that are impermanent. So this is the kind of thing you start to see: impermanence, suffering, and non-self. The three characteristics are deeply embedded. I mean, they're an essential, integral part of reality. So the getting into the benefits of mindfulness is, or the benefit of sati is the sampajanya, where you start to see things clearly where other people make the mistake, where before you would make the mistakes that would lead you to stress and suffering. So this is the meaning of these two terms. As to why they are of great benefit, I think anyone who practices them deeply has no doubt that they are of great benefit. For the most part, it changes a person's life to practice these two things. They're something not to be taken lightly. When they're the first part of the Dhamma study and it says, Bahupakara, these are a great benefit. You think, oh, okay, so I'll use these as I continue, not realizing that these are really of much benefit. They'll change your life. So what is the benefit of these two? Besides sati leading to sampajanya, sati leads to clarity, it leads to purity. Because of it leading to wisdom, it leads to freedom from greed. So all of the greed that we impose upon other people, harming them, and the greed that we impose upon ourselves that leads to stress and suffering, trying to get what we want, and suffering when we don't get what we want, anger that leads us to harm others, leads us to hold grudges and to create tension in our relationships, and also to simply burn our minds with hatred and with aversion and so on, fear and so on, and delusion, the freedom from the arrogance and conceit and doubt and worry and all of these qualities of mind that come about from the misapprehension of our experiences. The benefits of wisdom are that it frees us from ignorance, that it frees us from suffering. Seeing clearly is all it takes to find complete and perfect freedom from suffering, to attain nibbana, to become enlightened, to become a perfect being, free from all greed, all anger, all delusion, and all ignorance. Simply these two things, with all of the other aspects of the Buddha's teaching supporting them, these two things which are you can use all the time in your daily life, which are an integral part of meditation practice, something that we can and should develop all of our waking hours, lead us directly to the realization of the Four Noble Truths, seeing suffering, abandoning the cause of suffering, realizing the cessation of suffering. They constitute the essence of the path that leads to freedom from suffering. So to say that they are bahupakara is accurate, but something that should be stressed is perhaps even an understatement. Bahu, they are not just of much benefit, they are of the ultimate benefit, the greatest benefit, something that can and will change your life if you put them into practice. So that's the Dhamma for today.